We're on our third sermon in a series on biblical friendship. And you might remember the first message we talked about the form of friendship. And under the word form, we talked about both numbers, which is form, and shape, which is form. So what does friendship look like? And what are the ways that the word friend and friendship and the derivatives thereof are used in the scriptures? And from all of those uses, about 100, we drew a biblical definition of friend. And then last week, we talked about the foundation for friendship, and we talked about the relationship that is experienced between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And we said this is our foundation for why we are able to be people that have communication and communion and friendship. But we know that we can't just stay in the land of language, and we can't just stay in the land of eternity, that at some point this plane is going to have to land and we're going to have to talk about friendship on the ground. And as we do that, I'd like to begin today with talking about the first friendship. And when I say the first friendship, I'm of course talking about human friendships, relationships, man and man, or man and woman. And when we look at the biblical starting point for friendship, we can draw applications for our own friendships. And as we do that, as we think about friendship and what it means that there's a first friendship that is recorded in the scriptures, and we look at that and we say, what can I draw out of that? What can I apply to my own life from that? We need to understand that our starting point for this, the very first friendship, is that friendship that is in the garden between Adam and Eve. Things were perfect. Things are described as being good. Sin had not affected the world. Sin had not affected friendships. I know that some of you, as we have gone into this series, you're wanting to go right to those really practical, what happens when, you know, I get in a fight with a friend, and what happens when friends and I don't see eye to eye on this and that. There's all sorts of conflict that happens in friendship because the fall happened. But we can see that the roots of friendship, the first friendship, is in the garden before sin has affected humanity. Genesis 2:18, we have it recorded there, God saying, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." Now, I know that some of you will want to go straight to discussion of this being marriage rather than friendship, but I'd like you to hear me out. As we think about this, and God saying, it is not good that man should be alone, that we, for the first time in the history of creation, the first time in humanity, the first time in the scriptures, we encounter something that is described as not being good. Now think about that. The world is perfect. There's no sin in the world at all. And yet, even in perfection, even in its sinless state, God is able to look down on creation and see that man without companionship is in a state that cannot be described as good. One commentator says, "The skies without luminaries and birds are incomplete. The seas without fish are incomplete. Without mankind and land animals, the earth is incomplete." In this particular case, we should note that it is God who makes the judgment about the unsuitability of man's aloneness. Man is not consulted for his thoughts on this matter. At no point does man offer to God any grievance about his situation. To me, that is profound. There's Adam in a garden. He's got all this land. He's got all of these animals that he's been called to care for. He's got gold and all of these wonderful things that are flowing into these lands from where the rivers are. And not once does it come into Adam's mind that something is wrong. It's God who has to say, "Adam, this is not right." Think about that. I think that that is a profound statement. God has to show man that his aloneness is not good. And how does he do that? Remember, he lines the animals up, doesn't he? God says, "Adam, it's not good that you're alone." And Adam says, "Well, I don't know what that even means." And God says, "Let's start naming the animals. Let's see what you notice." And he's, there's a male and a female giraffe. There's a male and a female lion. There's a male and a female monkey. And he's going through the list. And God uses that for Adam to realize that he's alone. That he does not have companionship in the same way that the creation does. So as we look at this one starting point of biblical friendship, we need to start with this fact that it is God who has determined that it is not good that man be alone. God has determined that companionship is to be an integral part of the human story, a part of what it means to live out the image of God. Companionship is an important aspect of God's desire for humanity. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is whether it's fair for your pastor to call Adam and Eve friends. Am I just looking for ways to fill afternoon services? Or is there a friendship? We know there's a marriage between Adam and Eve, but is it fair to say that there are elements of biblical friendship? We know they're married, we know they're husband and wife, and that is a different relationship by nature than the relationship of friend. But is there elements of friendship here? Were Adam and Eve friends? Now, the classical Greek writers would say no. If you've read classical Greek writers on friendship, it's very clear that your spouse is not your friend. And that might sound strange to us. Some of you are amening this. This isn't good. But husband and wife relationship is described as being face to face, and friend relationship is described as being side by side. That's the ways that the ancients would describe friendship versus marriage. But I am arguing that when we look at the scriptures, what we find is that within the marriage of Adam and Eve and in God's intentions for marriage, at the center of that is this idea that the scriptures describe as friendship. Adam and Eve, in their cohabitation in the garden and in their relationship with God and in their companionship with one another, they reflect the biblical ideal of friendship. So Adam and Eve are our first friends. Timothy Keller comments in his book on marriage that marriage does not consist of just one form of human love. It is not merely romantic passion or friendship, or acts of duty and service. It is all these things and more. It is overwhelming. So we see that various elements of human love are found in marriage. And one of those elements of human love is that element of friendship. So what does that look like, and what lessons can we draw as we think about this first friendship that is not tainted by sin and frustration? Well, let me give you our working definition again. I hope that through the series you're able to put that in your mind. Our working definition of biblical friendship is: a friend is a person with whom you have chosen to share life and experiences, connected by demonstrations of loyalty, honor, affection, and love. So does this connect to the first friendship? We see that the definition includes aspects that do overlap in marriage. Marriage ought to have elements that are here in our definition of friendship. And we can learn about friendship as we look here at Adam and Eve. A very popular biblical counselor and frequent lecturer or speaker on marriage wrote, "In the 40-some years that I have been involved in the ministry of counseling, I have discovered that many couples live together, but they are not really friends. In fact, I would go so far as to say that many of them have no idea of what friendship with a spouse entails." What do we see from Adam and Eve? Is this a biblically defensible idea? Ought we to separate marriage and friendship? Should we say, this is my husband or this is my wife, and these are my friends, and they don't overlap? Well, we are part of a tradition that uses creeds and confessions and catechisms, and as Presbyterians, we have a few forms. We're a little bit suspicious of forms, but there's a few that pop up in our lives. Among our tradition of forms and confessions, we find that we have a lot to say on the doctrine of marriage. The Westminster Confession says, "Marriage was ordained for the mutual help of husband and wife, for the increase of mankind with legitimate issue, and of the church with a holy seed, and for the preventing of uncleanness." So what does that mean? Well, if we look at our doctrine of marriage, and we're thinking of the first marriage and the first friendship with Adam and Eve, we look at the marriage component, and starting backwards, working our way forward, the fourth reason is the preventing of sexual sin. The third reason is providing the church with worshipers, little children, to fill the pews. Third, for the increase of mankind, populating the earth. We don't just populate the church, we populate the earth. And the first reason given is mutual help. Mutual help. We call that companionship. The marriage form that I was married under, and there's probably at least one other couple that was married under the same Dutch Reform liturgy from the mid-1500s, uses the phrase, faithfully assist each other. This is part of our definition of a friend. When we talk about sharing life and sharing experiences, we have companionship in marriage. And Adam and Eve, as we look at the reasons that God created Eve, the first reason is not to satisfy sexual desire or to keep Adam from sexual sin. There is no sin. The first reason is companionship, friendship. When you look up the word companion in the dictionary, the first definition that you will find is friend. Mutual help is companionship. And when you dig a little deeper and you look at the etymology of the word, you see that it comes from the Latin, and the word come means together with, and panis means bread. One who comes with bread. That's a companion. One that is sharing these basic experiences of life with another. A friend. This companionship, this living life together and experiencing life together, or breaking bread together, as some would say, is what we find in the life of Adam and Eve. Adam looks around the animals and he notices that there's nothing on this earth that is able to provide the level of companionship that he needs, that God said that he needs. So God provides a friend. You might say, well, that's a stretch to make the jump from companion to friend, or to make the jump from mutual help to friend, but it's not. Proverbs 2:17 is in the section of Proverbs, you know, that long section in the beginning that is sort of a discourse on adultery, and then it goes into the Proverbs that we think of, ones that you could write on little tiny cards. But this opening portion of the book of Proverbs that deals with the adulteress, Solomon here gives insight into biblical marriage and even God's intention for marriage, which we're calling the first friendship. Solomon in Proverbs 2:17 says that the adulteress forsakes the companion of her youth. She forsakes the friend of her youth. We can swap those words out in English. Deuteronomy 24:5 gives us some insight into what the Lord would have originally intended in marriage and friendship between Adam and Eve. In Deuteronomy 24:5, there is this law that says, when a man is newly married, he shall not go out with the army or be liable for any other public duty. He shall be free at home 1 year to be happy with his wife whom he has taken. In this verse, we see that God's intention for marriage is that the husband and wife, especially in that first year, would be using that year to become friends, to grow in their companionship with each other. This is the husband not being called away for war or being called away for other types of service, whether it's business or other types of public service. That year is to be spent in happiness. Friends, that is the companionship. This is again reflection on what God's intentions in the first friendship are. That they would have this companionship that is characterized by blessedness or happiness as they choose to live together, mutually caring for one another and demonstrating these components of what we say make up biblical friendship. Wayne Mack writes, the husband's primary responsibility was to get to know his wife and to begin to develop a deep friendship that would likely continue through the rest of their lives together. So as you reflect, or as we reflect on the first friendship, those of you that are married, I want you to think about whether you are friends with your spouse, And those with philosophy degrees may tell you that you are not to be friends and make those distinctions that the ancients made. But biblically speaking, the person with whom you share life ought to be your friend. And it's not always the case, but it ought to be. And that's what we see in the life of Adam and Eve. Malachi 2 also gives us insight into this first friendship. This is that portion of Malachi where God is talking about the way that the people have forsaken Him and they've forsaken their wives. He says, "You cover the Lord's altar with tears, with weeping and groaning, because He no longer regards the offering or accepts it with favor from your hand. But you say, 'Why does He not?' Because the Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant." Your friend and your wife. This is what we see when we look to Adam and Eve. We see a friend and a wife. We see a friend and a husband. Companionship is God's desire. It's God's call for us. If it was said that it was not good that Adam be alone, without companionship, without mutual help, how much more those of us that live on this side of the fall? A perfect sinless man. It wasn't good that he was without friends, especially this first friend. How much more do you and I need companionship in this life? Your wife, your friend. Adam and Eve were friends living together in companionship and sharing mutual experiences of life together. And congregation, as you think about this first friendship, I don't want you to think in terms purely that are related to marriage or terms that are purely related to sexual intimacy or physical intimacy that is only lawful between a husband and a wife. As you think of first friendship, this first companionship, I want you to think first and foremost, this is what Adam and Eve were. They were companions. They shared life together. C.S. Lewis, talking about the way in which men generally fall in love, he says, there may be those who have first felt mere sexual appetite for a woman and then gone on at a later state to fall in love with her. But I doubt this is common. Very often what comes first is simply a delighted preoccupation with the beloved. General, unspecific preoccupation with her in totality. A man in this state really doesn't have the leisure to think of sex. He's too busy thinking of a person. The fact that she is a woman is far less important than the fact that she is herself. He is full of desire, but the desire may not be sexually toned. If you ask him what he wanted, the true reply would often be to go on thinking of her. And when at a later state the explicitly element awakes, he will not feel that this had all along been the root of the whole matter. See, when we think about companionship in the first marriage, what must have been most important for Adam and his wife, who is his friend, is thinking on her and thinking of the things that she enjoys, and vice versa, her thinking on the things that he enjoys. a preoccupation with one another. That's companionship. That's friendship. So what does it look like? As we've shown that Adam and Eve were companions based on the definition and part of the purpose that God has brought them together is for companionship. What are some applications that we can draw from this first friendship that we can apply to our own? The first relates to goodness. One of the glaringly obvious applications that we can bring from the text is the goodness of friendship. A whole perfect creation made without sin, and yet it's not good that man would be alone. And we, in our tradition, in the Reformed tradition, have interpreted that broadly. That's why some will talk about just the wife being the help. But even in our confessional statements from the 1600s, it says mutual help. It's mutual companionship. The goodness of companionship, of being friends. It's something that we ought to seek out. That we ought to seek to be in that place where God can look at our intimate community, whether that's with a spouse or as or without a spouse, but with those that are described as companions, biblical friends, and have God look down on that state and say, "This is good." See, without companionship being central to this, it tells us that those who live in the state of singleness, that their life is not good. And that's unbiblical. Singleness is good. As long as there is companionship within it. We need friendship because God says that it is good. Another application that we can draw from it is that of trust. Trust among friends. Trust is an important component of their companionship. And that can be seen in the fact that they trusted one another even to the point where it becomes their so-called Achilles heel. They sin together in reflection of their trust for one another. And we can look at that and we can say, well, that's sin, Pastor Nathan. They were not to do that. That was sin. That's absolutely right. They sinned. But their trust for one another is something that is good. And friends, we need to be able to trust those with whom we are friends. Remember the two levels of biblical friendship that we've talked about. We talked about connection and we talked about affection. In order to get to that biblical level of friendship that we call affection, there has to be trust. There has to be trust. And that's connected closely with the third aspect or component of this friendship, and that is vulnerability. They were naked and unashamed. I'm not saying that we ought to be naked and unashamed with our friends. It's not what we do in our culture. This nakedness was reserved for the fact that they were married, not merely friends. But that nakedness, we can draw from that an application of vulnerability. Vulnerability is a key component in biblical friendship. You know, you might be able to judge how close you are with a friend or how deep your friendship is by the level of secrets that you have shared. If there's somebody in your life that knows your darkest secrets and knows the things that you fear the most in life and the things that secretly bring you joy and all of those things that we hold personally that we don't just share all over the place. What are those secrets that you have to have a level of vulnerability to show your hand? See, that's only something you would do with a friend. And we need that. As Adam and Eve in their friendship would have had that. Who knows your trials? Who knows your tribulations? Who knows your secrets? If the answer is no one, then you ought to find a friend. And if the answer is everyone, you ought to find a friend. Vulnerability. And fourthly, for application from this first friendship, we see walking with God. Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the day. They lived their spiritual lives together. Whom have I in heaven but thee? If you are friends, you must be able to connect on a spiritual level. To have the requirements of biblical friendship. We know that we have friendships with people that are not Christian. But to reach that level beyond just coming to know one another and coming to be deep friends with whom we share vulnerability, there must be a level of spiritual connectedness. There must be a common ground spiritually. And I bet you have examples of friends where you say, you know, I have these two friends and they're very similar and I enjoy them for very similar reasons. But one I have a spiritual life with as we interact with spiritual things and occasionally pray together and occasionally challenge one another. And the other I just don't have. The one that you are closer to is going to be the one that is walking with you with God. Your most important friendships in life are going to be those with whom you share this spiritual connection. And you know why? Because you can go to the mall with anyone, but not everyone is going to challenge you in your spiritual life. Not everyone is going to love you enough to say, you know what, you are messing up. Not everyone is going to love you enough to say, where is Christ in your life right now? The wounds of a friend. Adam and Eve walked with God, and that's necessary for you today. Now, as you consider your friends and many of them are friendships that you discuss true elements of life with. Ask yourself, are they Christ-centered? Do I have a friend with whom I can share my spiritual life? You ought to. absolutely, you ought to. The first friendship teaches us the necessity of walking with God together. And those are some applications that we can draw from this first friendship that we see in Scripture. Again, friend is a person with whom you've chosen to share life and experiences connected by demonstrations of loyalty, honor, affection, and love. And this is first seen in humans, in Adam and Eve. The first friends, it was good. There was trust. There was vulnerability. And there was mutual spirituality. They were friends. Amen.